Welcome to Ray and
Faye. When I wake up, I look into the mirror. I can see a clearer vision. I should start living a day. Cause today's gonna be the day. It's gonna be the day. Cause today's gonna be the day. It's gonna be the day.
Yeah, it's like every day I wake up.
Hey, hey, it's a Friday, and it's Ray and Tay. This is Ray, Tall Rayside.
Yes, sir, and this is on the sidelines, but still in the starting lineup, Tay, Eric Taylor. Excuse
playing
the voice
hurt,
today.
He's playing hurt.
Yeah, you know, listen, even the fall and the chilly weather comes to Arizona quite a little bit. And for some reason, I think I caught a little bug, but I'm all right and ready to go. If people want to join in on a very good Friday show and hit us up at 718-664-9098. Definitely have some topics that Ray will tell you about that you definitely might want to call in on. And also hit us up on the email. I threw it out there to folks if they want to get in on the topics of our top five. Hit us up at RAEANDTAY today at gmail.com, and same thing for the Twitter and the Facebook. So Ray, let them know. Let them know what's rocking on this Friday.
Yeah, we got an action-packed show for you this Friday. We're gonna go through some breaking news. We're gonna go around the sports world. We got a little NASCAR, a little baseball, a little football, basketball. We got it all going on. We're gonna go quickly through the college games. There's a couple of top 25 matchups. But really one big matchup.
Only one that matters.
Exactly. We're going to review last night's game, Miami and Buffalo in the NFL, the kickoff of Week 11. We're going to go through the top matchups of Week 11. And we got four games we're going to highlight for you today. And then we get to basketball. We're going to talk some NBA. We had three really great games last night.
New York basketball.
Yeah, our Knicks undefeated, 6-0. And actually,
yes,
tonight,
baby,
they're playing the Grizzlies at 6-1. So the two best
teams
by record
got
the NBA are playing each other.
Yeah, doubleheader, Jazz and Sixers, and then Knicks Grizzlies. What a showdown.
Yeah, and then we're going to follow up in. We've waited years for this, for the Knicks to have the best record in the NBA. We were so excited that we dedicated our Top 5 Friday segment to the top five New York Knickerbockers of all time. So start thinking about that. Start marinating on that. We have some questions about if one of the current Knicks is going to break into that list or has broken into that list. But that's our top five Friday today, top five Knicks of all time. So let's jump into it. We got some breaking news.
Well,
let me go through
listen,
that.
First off, I guess we could talk about the football. As we get into the games, we'll talk about some guys in those games that'll be playing or be out. But your boy DeMarco Murray is not going to play again. And, of course, the two quarterbacks out of the three are not playing. Jay Cutler was ruled out. So Jason Campbell, former Redskin, will start, and former Raider for
former
Jay Cutler.
Tiger.
Yeah, definitely. Shout out to him and Cam, Auburn quarterbacks, right? And then this could be the last time. It's kind of crazy to say this, right? But Mike Vick might not start ever again for the Philadelphia Eagles, depending on how things go. Nick Foles from Arizona, from out here, is a big guy. He's big, sort of like Big Ben, big long hair kid. Nick Foles is starting. He played last week a little bit in relief, but he is starting against the Redskins this week. Should be interesting to see Nick Foles, and he might look good, right? Everybody looks good against that Redskins secondary, so we'll see what happens. And hey, maybe the Jets could get Mike Vick. We'll just throw that out there.
I'll take him over Tebow and Sanchez. And then Alex Smith hasn't been officially cleared to play, but that extra day, the fact that he's playing on Monday night, looks like
right.
He's going to work in
and
his
he,
favor.
And
he
practiced the last 2 days without contact, but he's practicing today, and practice is about to wrap up with contact. So we'll see how he goes. So it looks like Alex Smith will probably start. And Owen Daniels will be back this week for the Texans. So. Some interesting stuff. Yo, why don't you tell us what's going on down in Miami on Sunday at 1:30?
Yeah, we got the NASCAR. So it's basically Brad Keselowski and Jimmy Johnson are the only two that can win the Series Cup. So it comes down to one race, and it's Keselowski's to lose. He has to just finish in the top 15, and he wins, which, you know, first of all, kudos to Keselowski for his performance. But Jimmy Johnson, I mean, this guy won five in a row, didn't win last year. If he wins this year, it would have been 6 out of 7, which is pretty unbelievable. But really, ultimately, at Miami Homestead, it's Brad Keselowski's to lose, so he's likely going to be be the champion this year, and he had a great season. So we'll look for that. We'll talk about that on Monday.
Hope nobody like Jeff Gordon or these other guys with sour grapes, no crashes and stuff like that, you know, because if he, you know, finishes like 32nd like Jimmy did last week because of an accident or tire, then it's open to, you know, other guys. So you never know, but hopefully it's a good clean race. And,
yeah, I think it'll be.
Whoever deserves to win, wins it, you know.
It'll be too obvious if that happens, if somebody takes somebody out. But, no, I think it'll be fine. I think they'll run it on the merits, and whoever's the fastest car and makes the right pit decisions, they'll win the race. But, yeah, let's go to baseball. There's obviously in the last couple of days there's been some big news. Number one, today, Melky Cabrera signed 2 years, $16 million with the Blue Jays. And the Blue Jays built themselves a little squad. I mean, they added two starting pitchers. They added Jose Reyes. They added Melky Cabrera. They got the catcher buck. They're going to get they're going to get Joey Batts back, Joey Bautista back from his hand injury. And Edwin Encarnacion stepped up to become, a heck of a player. So that team, they were saying, may have added 20-25 wins.
Let's not get too hyped up because Burley and Johnson, they're okay. To me,
they're innings eaters. They can pitch. They save your bullpen.
I agree. But I'll say this. Neither one of them, to me, is better than a third starter. Possibly a two, but mainly they're threes to me. So I don't know the way that the Yankees, Orioles, Rays and Red Sox are, if that's just going to be enough all of a sudden to put the Blue Jays over the hump. And the AL East is ridiculous.
Yeah, the AL East
the Rays still have that pitching staff. The Orioles still got that young team and pitching staff, clutch hitting, great manager. And the Yankees are still the Yankees. And who knows if the Yankees get Josh Hamilton. So, we'll see what happens. I don't want to give the Blue Jays too much love too early, on that side. But I will say, shout out to Buster Posey yesterday winning the NL MVP. Yeah, and it's something we both talked about and predicted. He was pretty clear cut. But the AL, everybody said it's going to be so close. You got the Cybermetrics guys and offense, defense, stolen bases, yada, yada for Trout. And people thought it would be closer. 22 out of the 28 first-place votes went to Miguel Cabrera, baby, the first winner from Venezuela ever. That's right. Shout out to Venezuela. And, I like that, though, man. It kind of says clutchness, winning, and the numbers are what they are. It still matters. Like, yes, we know – you could get all these different stats and defense this and yada, stolen bases. But at the end of the day, even though the Angels had a better record, right, slightly, but the Tigers won their division, made the playoffs, and Cabrera, the last 2 months, put that team on his back. And he won the Triple Crown. It's not an easy thing. People act like those stats don't matter. They matter.
Well, here's the thing. I'm literally split down the middle on this one. I personally would have voted for Miguel Cabrera, so he deserves it. Anytime you win the Triple Crown, something that hasn't been done in, 45 years, you definitely deserve to be MVP. But if Mike Trout had won it, I wouldn't be mad. He missed the first two games of the season. First 2.5, 3 weeks of the season. He came up as a rookie. He's wet behind the ears, and the guy is arguably right now the best player in baseball. So if you started a team, I can't say that I wouldn't start this team without Mike Trout. And not only because he's young, because, you know, he's only 20 years old, but even if he was 30, he's still the best player in baseball. So this guy, Mike Trout, did
well,
everything.
Well, he's got to do it more than 1 year, though. Let's
maybe,
slow down
but
before we call him the best player in baseball.
Year,
he had one of the best seasons in baseball.
Exactly.
I will give
him
that.
He had one of the best seasons in a long time.
Yeah,
his
I'll give him
combination of offense, defense, you know, those catches he was making, getting on SportsCenter, and the stolen bases, and the fact that he roams that outfield, and he kicked Torrey Hunter out of center field, and Burgos. These guys have, the Angels had some talent in the outfield, and Mike Trout just stepped up. It's like, I'm the best one of them all. So,
yeah.
So kudos to Cabrera, heck of a year. If Trout had won it, he deserved it too. You know, to me, these both guys, if you look in the last 20, 30 years, either of these two guys could have won the MVP the last 20 years. I mean, their seasons that they had were just unbelievable. Now, shifting gears a little bit to Posey, Buster Rhymes Posey. Think about what a start to his career he's had. I mean, he's already up there in Jeter territory in terms of starting his career. The guy comes into the league as a rookie in 2010, Rookie of the Year, World Series. 2011, he has that gruesome leg injury, breaks his leg. 2012,
and he's the first catcher to win it since 1972, Johnny Bench.
He comes back, wins MVP and another championship, and first catcher since 72 and Johnny Bench to win the MVP. So the guy in 3 years has an MVP, two championships, and a Rookie of the Year. I mean, you can't start a baseball career better than that. And considering his 2011 was cut short because of a gruesome leg injury, I mean, Buster Rhymes is doing it. Now, the problem...
I think he's great. But it's catcher, and the longevity is the question.
Exactly.
Now, will he be stubborn?
You've got to put him at first base.
Well, that's the question. Will he be stubborn like Piazza and want to just stay at catcher forever? Will he go to first, or will he have to go to the American League and DH after a while? You know, we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, let's keep it moving, and let's talk about tomorrow, rivalry week. And what's so great is that, you know, there's not so many big games. You know, there's like three of the top 25 matchups, but there's only really one that matters in terms of the three undefeated teams, them playing somebody tough. Notre Dame plays Wake Forest. Kansas State plays Baylor. Pretty, you know, easy game. But the Oregon Ducks at number two are hosting the Stanford Cardinal. Break it down for me. What are you thinking?
So, you know, Stanford made the move and has the new quarterback, Kevin Hogan. He didn't play earlier in the season.
Yeah.
And their defense is not bad. So he gives them some athleticism, some versatility, because they were just running the ball before. Now they're throwing and running. Their defense leads the nation in sacks. So they're going to make some penetration and get behind the line of scrimmage. And Stanford always plays well as the underdog. You know, they
and Shaw's a great head coach. He's a great coach.
They always create some havoc. Here's the problem. They're on the road in Eugene, and Kenyon Barner and DeAnthony Thomas and Mariota, these guys just have too much speed and too much talent, and I don't believe that Stanford can stay with them in space. If you played this in a cage, you know, remember back in the days of when they used to call it the WWE, when they used to play in the
WWF.
Cage matches?
WWF, steel cage matches,
Yeah, before the World Wildlife Foundation sued them and made them change to WWE. They used to play a cage match, right? So if you played this in a cage, in a small, confined area, Stanford would be okay. But I think when you put those thoroughbreds out on the wings and you let them run and you let Barner and all these guys and DeAnthony Thomas and that speed on offense – is just unbelievable. The only thing they're saying is that there might be some distractions out there because pretty much it's a done deal that Chip Kelly will at least get some looks from the NFL. And they'll come sniffing around.
Well, yeah, because there's also some sanctions that might be coming his way. And we'll see what teams really are interested in him. You know, you don't know if KC gets rid of their coach or the Jets or – you know, Buffalo, who knows, you know, what happens with some of these teams. But, you know, to me, I don't even think the players are worried about Chip Kelly. I think what's the biggest thing is that I don't think Stanford could stop. These guys, Oregon, not just the speed, but they run for 325 yards a game rushing, third in the nation. That's incredible to me. So for me, I got to say, I think Oregon is going to be too much. I think Stanford stays with them for a little bit, but at the end of the day, I'm looking at 34-20, Oregon Ducks pull it off.
Yeah, I like that score. I think that they'll win by two touchdowns, if not more. I think that if they get into a shootout, Stanford just can't put up those kind of points. And in the second half, Oregon pulls away. They might score 38, 40, run up the score a little bit, get that number one, you know, wrestle that number one ranking away from K-State. Yeah, so I like them big. I you know, if I had to put a score out there, I'd say, you know, 42-28. So I got two touchdowns, and I got them putting up 40. Just one other note, though, and we got an email. We've been neglecting our emailers, so I feel bad about that. So let me throw a little email out there because it's on the topic. We've got another top 25 matchup, and this is what our emailer, Dan from L.A. Yeah, we got some folks in L.A., so we need to represent L.A. So let's at least give them some
Cali,
some time.
Cali. Listen, hey, I got to represent. Listen, Ray and Tay is coast to coast, right? I got AZ and Cali over here, so I got to hold it down. So go ahead.
Yeah. So the question is about Kiffin, right? He said if Lane Kiffin loses this week to UCLA, is he going to lose his job? Now, he didn't say next week. Right when they play
Notre Dame.
Because
yeah.
that's a losable game. But
well, they're both
actually,
what they're ranked what 17 and 16 in
18,
the nation. Or
yeah,
18,
UCLA
17?
Is 17 and USC is 18.
Yeah.
And you know when Mora came over to UCLA, there was a big stink about who's going to be the better team because USC was on probation and UCLA was rebuilding. But everybody thought that Kiffin had the better team. And his dad was implementing that defense. And he's frankly been up and down. So first, thanks to Dan. Shout out to our boy Dan in L.A. And I think Kiffin is in trouble. I think if he loses the in-state rivalry to UCLA, he still hasn't beaten Stanford, right? So if he loses the in-state rivalry to UCLA and then loses next week to Notre Dame with Matt Barkley, right, his prize recruit and, you know, should have been Heisman Trophy winner or at least was recruited as a freshman to be a Heisman Trophy finalist, he's in trouble, especially given the fact that they know, Pat Hayden knows that he recruits, he's got some shady history in terms of his recruiting and the deals that he cuts
and
so forth.
I think Pat Hayden, though, I think he'll be all right. I think Pat Hayden is pretty loyal, and I think that one thing I would say about Pat Hayden, I think he likes the fact that you've got Monty Kippen with him, and I think that coming to the program, you know, with the sanctions and recruiting through it and doing all that he's done, and obviously they're going to come out of it, and I think he's going to let him come out of it on the other end, and I don't think Kippen's going to go anywhere.
Even if
I
he loses, you think Kiffin's okay?
I don't think it's, you know, I mean, listen, it's one game. I think that, you know, they might not be as good as people thought they would be this year. I do think they'll beat UCLA. I think Barkley will have a big game. And, of course, our man who's up for the Heisman stuff, Marquise Lee.
Oh, he's not.
I think
put him on your fantasy roster.
Fantasy
roster for next year.
He's too young,
Marquise,
but let me tell you something. He would be a top 10 pick easily in the NFL draft if he was a junior, you know. But I will say this, not only, you know, and going back to what I was going to say before we leave this segment, for the Heisman, I think Klein is the clear-cut favorite. I think your boy Johnny Football, you know, they're bringing up a good campaign for him. I think what hurts him is how he played against Florida and LSU, couldn't get touchdowns and didn't have big games. So I think the one big win at Bama, you know, brings him into the conversation and probably puts him at second or third.
And he's
also
a freshman. And you know, a lot of these old school in their thinking and their took a while for Tebow to get to Heisman as a sophomore. And so
I don't think Manti Te'o is in the conversation anymore. And I think it's Klein, Manziel, Marquise
Kenyon
Lee,
Barner.
and then one of the Oregon guys. Yeah, probably Barner from Oregon. So But, I always loved Monty Ball, even though he didn't have a great season in Wisconsin. I think he's a stud in all that he went through before the season and even during the season. But,
maybe we'll give him the Ray and Tay Heisman. We'll throw him Heisman on our show.
We'll definitely, obviously as it gets closer, we'll talk about it even more next week. So let's take a quick break, and then we will break down last night's game and the rest of this week's games in Week 11 in the NFL.
We're back, and we're back to talk NFL, Week 11. I still can't believe we're in double digits already, but that's another story for another day.
Too fast, man.
So we had a I guess you could call it a good game, right? It was the Dolphins and the Bills played up in Ralph Wilson Stadium.
I was a little surprised by it. But I got to say, what's kind of funny? And this makes me go back to one of our favorite football quotes. They are who I thought they would have been.
Where are who we thought they were?
The Buffalo Bills, right? I expected them to have a pretty decent defense and pretty decent team this year and push for a wild card. And, they won to come up to tie the Dolphins to be at 4-6. Well, what happened last night was I guess you started to see a healthy Mario Williams, Marcel Darius, Kyle Williams, that defensive line was able to put that pressure on, and Stephon Gilmore and the corners were one-on-one on the, not-so-fast Dolphin wide receivers, and they just they locked them down. They got to Tannehill. They put the pressure. They win 19-14. Your boy Spiller with Alfred Jackson playing, totes it over 20 times for 91 yards, plays a good game, over 120 total, yards of rushing and passing. And I think the Bills, this is shocking for me to say, but if my Steelers have any trouble with Ben being out possibly 2 to 4 weeks, I think, the Bills, I think, could get on a roll and push for that last wild card spot to fight off,
Really? At 4-6?
Yeah,
we'll talk about that as the
We'll
as
see.
The
I just
by.
Think the Bill, I think the Bills are going to get healthy and get the right formula, and I think they're going to play better the second half of the season.
Yeah, I think the Dolphins have a problem that the Jets have and a few other teams have. They have no playmakers. So when you shut down the run, when you shut down Thomas and Bush, and they ran
21 yards, right? Bush.
53 yards. Yeah, together they barely averaged 2.5 yards a carry. Then the problem is Best, Hartline, Fasano. They're just not playmakers, right? They're decent players. They're third or fourth wide receivers. But when you have to rely on them to make plays, and like you said, Buffalo has some great individual defenders. And finally, all that money that they put and Wilson at the safety position, I have him on our fantasy team. Yeah. but like you said, Mario Williams and Darius, and seriously, they've got talent, and Gilmore. They've got talent on that team. It's just where have you been? Where have you been? So maybe you write this season off and,
I'm right here, dog.
What Buffalo will do is probably tease everybody and then end up, 8-8 with some momentum going into next year. But Buffalo is has a better roster than Miami. And so they should have.
Oh, without question.
They did.
Without question.
It took a lot of field goals. They ended up winning. But, it was a good game, I suppose. For a Thursday night game, it was good to start the season off.
Tannehill jerked me around, though, as my quarterback.
You shouldn't have played him, though.
Jay Cutler's out. Jay Cutler's out. What am I supposed to do? I had to
pick up somebody. Where's your real
that's what I picked
skills?
Up. There's nobody else. Listen, I didn't want to pick up Brandon Wheaton. I don't trust him. I think the Cowboys' defense is going to show up. So, look, I went for the best matchup, a weaker defense. You got to think he's going to do a little bit something else. Whatever. Let's look forward, man. Sunday, man. Some good games. We'll start off with the 6-3 Green Bay Packers going to the 4-5 Detroit Lions.
Surprising
Let me ask you this. Are the Lions the most disappointing team in the NFL? That's a legitimate question. Besides the Eagles, right? Eagles is the obvious answer. But with the Lions season they had last year, you know, going into this game, this is the type of game that if the Lions are, you know, getting ready to go into the Thanksgiving weekend, if the Lions are real and want to do anything with this season, they got a whole court at home, and they need to upset the Green Bay Packers. I don't know if they can do it. Greg Jennings is out. You know, Clay Matthews will probably play banged up. Jordy Nelson is playing this game. But, you know, can the Detroit Lions, with their new, you know, Megatron sort of healthy again, you know, they're running the ball.
200 yards, Megatron, yeah.
Well, what do you think? Can the Lions shock the world and pull up this upset against the Packers?
Shock the world! So, yes, the Lions are, I don't know, I'd have to look at every team if they're the most disappointing team. But certainly I had them at 10-6 and going to the playoffs. I thought they'd be even better than Chicago this year. So
What I'm saying. The Eagles are obviously the most disappointing, but the Lions are
right
up there with them.
Right up there. But 4-5, look, you're right. You can salvage a season with one win. You go 5-5, things are looking better. You pulled Green Bay down to 6-4, so you're only one game behind them if you win. The only problem is they have Aaron Rodgers and you don't, if you're the Detroit Lions. Now, Matt Stafford's a heck of a player, don't get me wrong. But have you seen the stats? The last four games. So remember 4 weeks ago, they lost on your boy Golden Tate's little push-off, and they catches the ball up in Seattle, and everybody's thinking, oh, my God, that's Green Bay's third loss. What's happening? And then they have New Orleans, which is a tough matchup. They end up winning the game. But they win four in a row, and in that stretch, Aaron Rodgers quietly, don't tell anybody, he throws 15 touchdowns and one interception. I mean, the guy is basically perfect. Yeah, with tons of injury, right? Jordy Nelson goes down. JerMichael Finley, I don't know where he is. He's half checked out. He's throwing it to, he's beefing about not getting the ball enough and this
Crab
and the other.
Crabtree.
And he's throwing
Jones.
Crabtree and Jones and
Driver. Cobb.
Driver's back from Dancing with the Stars, and Randall Cobb is catching balls. So he's throwing it to not exactly household names and not exactly, Lynn Swan and Stallworth. So he's 15-1. I just think that in order to shake him up, you got to play outdoors or you got to play something where your pass rush gets to him, but he's such a great athlete. I don't know. I look at Rodgers as just being on top of his game. He had a little hiccup in the first 2 weeks, even though if you look at his numbers, they weren't awful, but they just weren't last year's 15-0 MVP performance. I just think Rodgers is going too well, and to me, Detroit still can't run the ball. So even though LeSure had that big game with all those touchdowns, and my boy Joik Bell is doing a little something, I just don't think that they're going to get into a shootout inevitably. It's going to deteriorate into a shootout, and Green Bay is just hitting their stride. And now with James Starks and Green, and they're starting to run the ball a little bit and have more balance, and Aaron Rodgers is basically not making any mistakes. They do have some injuries, like you said, Clay Matthews, and they got some injuries in the secondary. But I can't see this Green Bay team losing this week. I got them winning.
Well, I will say this. Watch out for Detroit's defensive line. Nick Fairley coming in, playing great, actually looking like the star of that defensive line. I think the Packers are going to win a close one, possibly 26-24. But the one thing I will say about Detroit that could happen, they could wind up getting two your boy Rodgers and throwing him off, because I think Ndamukong Suh and Fairley and those guys, Cliff Averill, they can make the difference. And, you know, maybe Brandon Pettigrew starting to show up a little bit. So we'll see. But I have the Packers as well. So let's go to our next game. Keep it moving along. We have got San Diego.
San Diego, Superchargers.
This is the game where we saw Super Peyton Manning come back from a 24-0 lead, right, in San Diego. Well, now
unanswered, yeah.
It's incredible. But now the 4-5 Chargers go to the 6-3 Broncos. For me, look, your boy Von Miller, he is could be the defensive player of the year. He's got the 10 sacks.
And the rookie Carter is doing big things too.
Well, he's like a cover corner now. He's just incredible. I don't know if Dumervil is definitely going to play. He's a little banged up. But what I like is McGahee's got to hold on to the ball, right? That's number one. But what I do like about the Broncos now, being at home and just the way they're playing, Manning, the light is turned on with that offense and the receivers. Now they know where they need to be, where Manning wants the ball. I mean, you got Stokely, you got Decker, you got Demaryius Thomas, you have Dreesen, Tammy. Like, it's just a well-oiled machine, and he's got these guys going. I just don't know if Phillip can get enough protection from his offensive line, and it looks like Ryan Matthews could possibly miss the game, and he's going to have to rely on Jackie Battle and Ronnie Brown. So to me, I just think the Broncos are too tough, and I think they win. It's not going to be a blowout, but I think they win like 27-20.
You know, I have every reason to think that the Broncos will win. They're 6-3. They're at home. Peyton Manning also been on a crazy roll, 18 touchdowns and 3 interceptions in his last 7 games. So he's pretty much unstoppable. But you know what? I have a funny feeling that San Diego, who has typically been an excellent second-half team the last 5 or 6 years under North Turner, they're going to return the favor. They went and they were up 24-0, and they lost that game 35-24, giving up 35 unanswered. Peyton Manning had his best second half ever. And Peyton Manning's done a lot of things, 4 MVPs, and he gets his best second half ever in that game. I feel like San Diego's going to figure it out. They're going to figure out a way to win. Even though Denver's been winning games, I don't know that they've been blowing people out and been by far the class of the NFL. They're a very good team, but I don't know that they're elite yet. And I think that they do have some weaknesses that San Diego can exploit. And Phillip Rivers is going to find a way. I feel like Antonio Gates is going to go Ponce de Leon style, go back to the fountain of youth 5 or 6 years ago. And he's going to get some production out of that offense. And again, I don't have any real reason to think that Denver shouldn't win, because on paper they're at home and everything's in their favor. I just feel that San Diego's going to have some motivation. They were embarrassed with that loss at home, and they're going to return the favor in, what are they calling it now, Invesco Field, Safeco Field at Mile High.
Yeah, listen, all these companies, it's Mile High, playboy.
Mile High, exactly.
Well, listen, this is what our next matchup is, very exciting to me, because it's sort of like the new Jack City versus the old champ. You got the Indianapolis Colts.
Is that going to be in that movie?
Yo, it's going to be hot. The Indianapolis Colts, right, with your boy Andrew Luck, 6-3 Colts, going to Gillette Stadium, New England Patriots, 6-3, Tom Brady and the Patriots. This is interesting to me. I think the Patriots, number one, are favored by way too much. 9.5 points is ridiculous. But the one thing I would say is I don't think the Patriots' defense, even though they know how to, like, stop you when they need to, I don't think they're, you know, tough enough to blow the Colts out. I know that he can, you know, design a defense to try to confuse the young quarterback, and he, you know, Belichick feasts on rookies. But this is not your average rookie. This is not your ordinary Joe. I think the Colts are going to go in there, shock the Patriots, and
win?
Take them to no.
Oh.
Take them to the
that
end.
Would shock
maybe
the Patriots. If they cover
maybe
the spread,
even,
that's not shocking.
No. I know, but I'm talking like maybe even send a game into overtime, and I think the Patriots pull it out in OT, 30-27. It's going to be one heck of a game, and the Colts are going to give them all they can handle. And I wouldn't be surprised if they did pull the upset.
Wow.
It's going to be a battle. And just remember, look, Hernandez is not back yet. Wes Welker's a little banged up. Don't sleep on those Colts, baby. That's all I'm saying. 30-27 Patriots, but do not sleep on the Colts.
Okay, I have a different perspective. The New England Patriots, with all of their trials and tribulations and troubles on defense and the fact that Wes Welker was iced out in the beginning of the season and then it was the man in the middle of the season and then Aaron Hernandez got hurt and then they're banged up and they don't really know what to, you know, who's going to play at running back. They've had some issues at running back with health and everything. They're the number one offense in the NFL, scoring 33 points a game. So if you are the Indianapolis Colts, that means you need to score 30 or more to win this game, especially because it's at home, Gillette Stadium. In November, the Patriots will be ready to play. So the Indianapolis Colts have to put up points. The problem is that, and by the way, New England has a gaping hole in their defense, especially in the secondary, that they tried to fill with the Aqib Talib trade.
And we'll see if he's going to play it all this week. He might play a little bit.
Indy has to take advantage of that. The problem is the way you take advantage of that is with balance. I mean, I think you need to run the ball to expose the defense, because otherwise you just put a lot of pressure on T.Y. Hilton and the tight end.
Donnie Avery.
They're going to focus on Reggie Wayne and try and take him out of the game. So to me, the key is Ballard and Brown, and can they run the ball? Because if you can't run the ball and you don't have balance against New England, you can't exploit them. You can't exploit their secondary and their defense. So I don't think they'll be able to run the ball. I don't think they'll be able to be balanced. And I think that New England comes close to covering. So I think New England scores 35 and maybe the Colts score 27 or 24. So if it's 24, they would cover. So I don't know that the Colts can score as much as they need to and take advantage of this defense. So I like New England big.
All right. Well, look, our Sunday night battle, the
Baltimore
Ravens.
Oh, yeah.
At 7-2. This is a 7-2 that has not been so pretty, but hey, 7-2 is 7-2.
Yep.
Go to Heinz Field. Get out the ketchup, baby. My 6-3 Steelers without Big Ben. He's out. Leftwich has practiced all week. It looks like Mendenhall might be able to go. Antonio Brown's a game time decision. And
Sanders. But I can't play.
Yeah, listen, Emmanuel Sanders is a big pickup for fantasy. I would pick him up. Kotry, look out for Heath Miller. But to me, this is the thing. These Baltimore Ravens, the reason why people aren't in love with them is because Flacco on the road has not been so tough. He's big at home. But the defense. Crazy injuries. Reed got banged up again last week. Suggs is back. I don't think he's 100% yet. But they're 26th in the NFL against the run. The Steelers this year can run the ball.
All three running backs are going to play, right?
Yeah, well, look for Redmond and Dwyer to run it down their throats. And I think for the first time, without Big Ben, the Steelers will shock the world and beat the Baltimore Ravens 23-20.
Not that shocking.
Listen.
Save your shock.
23-20. 23-20. Listen, you couldn't beat the Ravens, so don't say nothing to me. You couldn't beat the Ravens, so don't say nothing to me. 23-20, the Steelers win over the Baltimore Ravens, baby.
Okay, well, I got to take the other side of that. I take the Baltimore Ravens. I think for the last two or three years, they've been the better team. They're banged up a bit on defense. You know, we all know about Webb and Ray Lewis being out. But your boy Ryan Clark's dealing with two concussions in 3 weeks. And obviously, the Steelers don't have Polamalu again. And
Rick Monday.
Yeah,
next man up, baby.
They're banged up. So the best player on the field is Ray Rice. And he plays for the Baltimore Ravens. So if the Ravens can get Ray Rice off and he can get a couple of screens and he can run the ball, I think that'll open it up for Flacco to get it to his Torrey Smith into his tight ends and, you know, Pitta and Dixon.
We're locking them.
I like the Ravens in this game. I think Big Ben being out hurts. I mean, you did have a week with the backup, Byron Leftwich, and he's a quality NFL backup, but he has that slow motion, that arm, but he's got that long, deliberate, you know, rotation.
Release.
And I just think he's a sitting duck back there. I think Baltimore is going to rattle him a little bit. The key is if you can run the ball, right? If those three running backs can run the ball and take the pressure off of Leftwich and put him in third and three, third and four, you know, where he can easily convert, then you have a chance. And you're right. They are ranked 26th against the run, so you think that they have a weakness there. But I just think the Ravens, Ray Rice, the D is going to show up. They're not as bad. They have some talent. They're not as bad as their 26th ranking would lead you to believe. I think the Ravens win this game. I think the Ravens go in there, pour some ketchup on your Steelers, and your Steelers drop to 6-4, and Ravens go to 8-2.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break, and we come back, and let's jump into the NBA, baby. Ray and Tay.
Okay, here I come, hip hop's number one son. Or truth be told, I'm more like a.
We're back, and we're talking about the association. That's the National Basketball Association. And we had three really good games last night, and two nationally televised games, really fun games to watch. So let's talk about them. We had.
Well, look, the best one was not on TNT. So let's talk about that one first for us NBA, league pass people or the folks in New York and San Antonio. The New York Knicks, it's 6-0. They beat the Spurs, man. And listen, in the fourth quarter, this is what's so great. 7 minutes to go, the Knicks are down 12 points. And they just, it starts off with the defense, Jason Kidd getting steals. Chandler holding down the boards enough, even though the Knicks get rebounded every single, out-rebounded every single game. You had Felton, 25.7 assists, penetrating addition. They're double-teaming and coming at Melo. You know, he shot 3-for-12, but he made the right passes, played good defense, did what he needed to do. Had, I think, like 12 rebounds. He's averaging 8 a game. Melo's just playing ball, man. And I think last night you saw that this team, they don't panic. They were patient. JR hit, he didn't even take that many threes. Hit a big three when Melo threw the pass out to him. And Jason Kidd hit two huge threes. And the Knicks just came back and handled them and beat the Spurs, man. And they finally started to rotate better on the pick and roll. And defense, defense, defense. It's the first time all year the Knicks gave up 100 points. And
it's
win
amazing
104
because
to 100.
The Knicks,
it's incredible.
The Knicks are pretty amazing. I mean, they are. I don't even recognize them. The Knicks are the best D in the NBA. They have the fewest turnovers in the NBA. They're second in scoring. So, and they've beaten. They're 6-0, but they haven't beaten Milwaukee, Indiana, Charlotte, and other cellar dwellers. I mean, they beat the Heat, the Celtics, and the Spurs. And they beat San Antonio in San Antonio, which is a heck of a feat. But more than all of that, if I told you, A, that the Knicks would score 104 points, and B, that they would win the game with Carmelo going 3-for-12 and only scoring 9 points, you'd say, where's the offense coming from? How are they going to do that? So that's the most impressive thing to me, is that Carmelo only gave him 9. I mean, if the Knicks win and Carmelo has 30, yeah, that's impressive, but we know Carmelo's the man. But when the Knicks can win and Carmelo only has 9 and everybody played smart, nobody panicked, the Spurs and Popovich, who's probably the best coach and the best schemer in the NBA, was able to scheme the ball out of Carmelo's hands, and Kawhi Leonard was giving him all he could handle, and they were rotating and Ginobili and so forth. But 9 points. And the Knicks
listen, JR gives you 17, 25 from Felton.
Yeah, stop going to the clubs. Stop
Rasheed
going
Wallace,
to the club every night.
Yeah. Well, listen, he admitted I like that, though, right? He admitted
that
he's a changed man.
Mature. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a changed man. And I think this is the JR that everybody was hoping they'd get in Denver. And I think he's finally here and he's matured. And the Knicks are pretty lucky. Plus the fact, guess what? He's got a 1-year deal for $2.5 million. He wants a long-term contract with the Knicks.
Sure.
So the Knicks have a perfect situation, and veterans like Rasheed and Canby and, listen, Thomas, it just we have professionals in our locker room, man, and it's great. I think tonight, we got the two games on ESPN, the Jazz and Sixers, and then you have the Knicks down in Memphis. This is going to be a great game, and it's okay on a back-to-back. Listen, if we lose tonight, I'm not upset. We go 6-1. We're not going to go 82-0. because the way we won last night showed me such character that as a Knicks fan, I'm ecstatic. So I think tonight we play Memphis. Look, Rudy Gay. I mean, look what Memphis smacked up Miami a couple nights ago. So Rudy Gay, Zach Randolph, who took care of your boy Perkins. He was like, yo, meet me outside. Meet me at the phone. I don't play that.
Give us a lot of problems.
Yeah. You know, and Gasol, that size, and Tony Allen on the all-defensive team last year, first team, and Conley's much improved. It's going to be a heck of a battle, but you know what? I like this team. This team can go to war with anybody. And Jason Kidd, he's our glue. He's our catalyst. Perfect veteran, perfect player.
When Amari comes back, how's that going to work? And I guess we won't know until he is back.
Hey, listen, you know, at the end of the day, I think Amari is going to be the difference maker to make us be able to beat the Heat or the Celtics in the playoffs. So however it's going to work out, we got to make it work out. And I think as long as he's healthy and it's better for him to stay out longer to get 100%, they'll be fine. They'll be able to play ball and make it work. And I like the fact that, you know what, Kidd won't have to play as many minutes as he's playing when, you know, Brewer's a little bit more healthy. And then when Shumpert comes back, I just think it just makes our team even deadlier. The Knicks are to be reckoned with. And your boy, Steven, my boy, Novak is shooting the lights out.
Yeah, let's keep it in New York for all our New York fans to talk about this game last night. Brooklyn in the house. So, yeah, Brooklyn played the Boston Celtics.
Without Rondo, though.
Yes, without Rondo. But,
yeah.
But you know, you got to win the games that are on your schedule. And they did. So, 102-97. So, the Nets are now 5-2. So, you got the 6-0 Knicks and the 5-2 Nets. So what do you think about Brooklyn? What's your takeaway on that?
Well,
so you
the
can't
first
really
thing I say about that
Boston
game
without Rondo, but what do you think about the Nets so far?
Well, the first thing I'll say about them is they should have been 6-1, right? They shouldn't have lost that game to Minnesota at home, their second game at home. But 5-2 is a good record. The one thing I like about this team is their versatility, and we talked about it, and I spoke about it for me when I talked about that backcourt. I like the fact that Williams and Johnson both can pass, they both can score, they can slide up to, instead of playing 1-2, can slide up to the 2-3. I love C.J. Watson off the bench, and to me, Evans and Blatch give them some toughness that makes them, you know, very, very dangerous, but more so against a team like the Celtics with, you know, Jeff Green and Sellinger and Garnett, Wilcox. They don't have any real big size. I think where the Brooklyn Nets have trouble is like Miami is just a little bit more athletic than they are, or if they're going to play up against the Lakers, maybe, you know, maybe a bigger Knicks when they get healthy, the Clippers, teams, you know, Memphis with more size. I think that's where Lopez and Humphreys, to me, have trouble rotating. Yeah, playing the pick and roll defense. You know, but I think the Nets are tough, man, and I just still think that I would, you know, go out there and grab me up a Kenyon Martin.
What'd you think about Jerry Stackhouse playing 21 minutes last night?
Yeah, well, Jerry, you know what's so funny? This is like his second or third game where he's really played a lot of minutes, contributed, and I think it's just great to see. I love their white jerseys. I love their black. I just love their jerseys. I love that court at home, and it's good for them to win in New York. You know, I mean, look, we're only like a week or so away from the big, you know, the big matchup of in 10 days, the 26th, right? Is Brooklyn Nets hosting the New York Knicks? So that's going to be a huge game and a huge battle.
That was postponed from Sandy.
Yeah.
So we've been waiting for that one.
Oh yeah, and it's going to be great, you know. And it'd be more amazing if the Knicks were like going into that game like what, like 10 or 11-0, going into that game. That would be insane going into that game. But look, Brooklyn's good. They're going to be tough. And then last night you had the Miami Heat, you know, with the banged up Dwayne Wade, just
right,
doing
and
what
LeBron
they needed to.
Putting up crazy numbers: 27, 7 rebounds, 12 assists, 3 blocks and a steal.
He led the team in every category: points, rebounds, assists, and block shots. 4 categories. I mean, that's just incredible. LeBron is, again.
The Nuggets are a good team.
The Nuggets are pretty good. I think that, you know, Gallinari, come on, he's not really clutch yet, though. That air ball was a mess. You know, look, the Nuggets, if they if they could really find a true, true go-to player. I mean, you got Andre Miller, you know, who played well off the bench like he always does. I think he pitched in 17. Ty Lawson's tough. I like that team, but it's almost like they have too many very good players and not one great player.
And that kills
the
you in the playoffs when the game slows down and it goes
no
to a
better.
Half-court game.
Yeah, I think they're no better than, you know, a 4 or 5 seed and just can't get to a Western Conference Finals. So,
no,
you know,
hey,
it is what it is. And, you know, AI, too, is you know, pretty good and maybe their best player. But, you know, I just think the Heat are incredible, man. And, you know, they needed that win after losing, you know, to the Clippers, which was a great game. And, Chris, let me tell you something. Like I told you, DeAndre Jordan is going to be most improved player of the year, and he's getting busy. Blake Griffin, they still don't even have Billups, a healthy Odom, and Grant Hill back.
Grant Hill,
That Clipper team is going to be so sick because Chris Paul and Jamal Crawford and an improved Griffin and Jordan and Caron Butler, just the perfect three, and the veteran defense, offense, that team is so, so tough. You know, that's
yeah,
really what's going to...
Except for the fact that they're young up front with DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin. I mean, that team really doesn't have weakness. I mean, experience is lacking a little bit, but I think with Caron Butler, with his experience from Dallas, Chris Paul being the all-around great floor general, if they can get their front court together and the team gets healthy and they can bring Billups and Hill back, especially with all of their veteran leadership, that's a team to be reckoned with in the playoffs. But yeah, let's move it along because we got, you know, we're on a basketball kick right now, and we got our Friday segment.
Top five Fridays,
and you know our Knicks are 6-0, so they have the best record in the association. So Tay and I
said, let me say this real quick. I just found out the Washington. It's not big news or nothing, but the Wizards signed Sean Livingston, right, who had that bad injury in the ex-Clipper. Tall point guard, and they cut Jamero Pargo. So the Wizards are trying to make some moves until John Wall comes back, you know. So, look, they haven't won yet, so they're trying, right? They're trying to do something. So let's get back to
that team. You got to shake up that team, but that's another story. So we've got our segment, Top 5 Fridays. So we sat and scratched our heads, and as Knicks fans, we wanted to throw it out there for all you Knicks fans or Knicks haters. Whatever, wherever you are on the fence, let us know what you think. Top 5 New York Knickerbockers of all time. So usually we read off Ray's list and Tay's list, and we combine and we talk a little bit about it. We critique each other's list. But we were pretty similar in our list. We just had one big question mark, which we'll throw out to our fans, and you guys can call in and comment or send us comments on Facebook or Twitter. But we wanted to give you our top five of all time and then ask you where Carmelo Anthony fits in on that top five. So without further ado, let's
do you
want
to start at number one and work our way down to five?
Yeah, so let's work our way down because there's not a lot of drama here. So we said our number one guy, we both concluded that our number one is Patrick Ewing. Now, a lot of people Patrick Ewing came in as the savior in 85 with Dave DeBuscher as the GM and went to two finals in 94-99, even though 99 he ruptured his Achilles, so it wasn't quite as impressive as 94 where he carried the team. Everybody gets on him because he didn't win a championship, and that's why our number two guy is Clyde Frazier. A lot of old-time Knicks fans think Clyde is the best Knick of all time.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Al Trotwig will remind you that in every MSG broadcast where he talks about Patrick Ewing. He keeps reminding you that he thinks Clyde is the best of all time. I can't really fight that. But for our money, for Ray and Tay's money, we give it to Patrick Ewing. He didn't have Hall of Famers around him. Clyde and Willis Reed and all these guys
And that's no knock on some of our favorite Knicks like Anthony Mason, Charles Oakley, and John Starks, but they just weren't Hall of Fame players, you know.
Right.
And
Ewing was a workhorse, and yeah, he was a little irritable, and yeah, he wasn't the best guy to interview, and yeah, he wasn't the nicest sweetheart. darling pro athlete in New York, and he didn't wasn't quite.
But he was a warrior. I don't think that.
He was a warrior. I have no problems with Patrick Ewing. He gave in. He put in his time. He put in overtime. He played for 15 years and did his best. You know, so to me, the leading.
He should have played longer in New York. I think the Knicks fans regret what happened, and the Knicks made a big mistake shipping him off. Shipping him to Seattle, and then he played in Orlando. And the Knicks made a mistake. They should have just let him retire, and Nick signed him to a 2 or 3 year deal, and just he could have rode off in a sunset and retired the way he should have as a New York Knicks. So
we got
Frazier,
number one, Clyde Frazier at number two. And what people don't remember about Clyde Frazier is that his career was actually not that long with the Knicks. It was only 9 years. He ended up coming over. Playing with the Knicks, drafted by the Knicks, playing with the Knicks, and then we traded him to Cleveland, and his last year was just a disaster in Cleveland. But Clyde, that's Walt Clyde Frazier, man. He won two championships with the Knicks. He had possibly the game of all games in an NBA final, right? In the Game 7 game in 1970, he had 36 points and 19 assists. I mean, that's unbelievable. People don't talk enough about that game as being one of the best games of all time. So Clyde was our man at number two. At number three, we had his teammate, the captain. Again, on that 1970s team, he tore that muscle in his leg, came out in game six against the Lakers, came out in game seven, hit those two jumpers, only scored 4 points, but he was the inspiration. Willis Reed, number three Knick of all time. So in 1970, was the MVP. He was played with the Knicks for 11 years, a seven-time All-Star, two rings, again, with Clyde. They won in 70 and 73. So, number three.
Some people debate
list.
And argue that that was probably the best all-around team in NBA history.
True
You know,
team.
Because everybody shared everything. The ball,
the
they passed.
And, yep.
All those Hall of Famers, Bradley, you know.
Dick Barnett, Bill Bradley, that was a legitimate team. So number four, we also agreed on, and his name from Brooklyn is Bernard King. Now,
BK Love.
For those of you who don't know, and if you're too young, go into the archives and check out Bernard King, starting with the Ernie and Bernie Show in Tennessee. But he played with the Knicks from 82 to 87, but he tore his ACL and really only played 82 to 85. But in those 4 years, he was a three-time All-Star. He led the league in scoring nearly 33 a game, which is unbelievable, in 85, and brought the Knicks to the Eastern Conference Finals against the Celtics and really just was on the precipice of being, you know, one of the best players. He was one of the best players in the NBA, but really borderline Hall of Famer. And later in the season, we're going to start our Bernard King for Hall of Fame campaign.
Definitely.
So BK is number four on our list, and now number five becomes a little
wait,
bit
wait,
of
wait,
a
wait.
Case.
I got to say about BK, man. The one thing that people might remember is every night, whether it was against Bird or Dr. J or against Mark Aguirre, against Dantley, Bernard King brought it. He brought it against the Pistons, Kelly Trepuka, whatever small forward he went up against, the Knicks had a shot. And Bernard King, like Patrick Ewing, didn't have great players. You know, he had Bill Cartwright,
Louis Orr, Rory Sparrow,
you know,
our boy
Louis
Trent Tucker,
you know,
who
he had
trying
a bunch
to get
of,
on the show.
Bunch of just, you know, okay players. Bernard King was the man. Now, number five, Ray feels he thinks it should be Dave DeBuscher.
I think it should be Dave DeBuscher.
Okay,
and
he played from
68
to 74, right, with the New York Knicks. And DeBuscher had a very good career, power forward for the Knicks, played a lot with the Detroit Pistons. For me, I think it should be Carmelo. It's only, you know, he's going after this season. It'll be two and a half years he's been here.
88
contract
games.
Contract finishes out. It'll be like 7 years.
Games. He's only played 88
games
with the Knicks.
But,
how could he be the fifth best player in the Knicks history?
He's going to be here for as many years as DeBuscher, if not longer, when the contract is over. And to me, Carmelo Anthony is in a whole different class from DeBuscher, and he is going to carry the Knicks maybe to a chip.
You might be right. I don't know about the chip, but you might be right. And in Ray and Tay season 5, we can debate that. But 88 games into his career, I can't give it to him yet. He hasn't done enough as a Knick. And that's not to say he's not a great player. He just has only been with the Knicks for 88
games. That's all right.
I'm
projecting what he's going to do with the Knicks. And he's going to be, and he is, any day of the week, better than Dave DeBuscher.
All right. Well, let us know on Twitter what you think, on Facebook. Thanks so much for being with us. Ray and Tay, have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
That's right. Look out for my Stillers, yo. Ray and Tay, we're out. Thanks for talking sports with friends. Knicks gonna win tonight. We're gonna beat the Grizzlies. 7-0, baby.
Woo!